Welcome to Salon Talks. I'm Mary Elizabeth Williams. I'm so happy today to welcome Harlan Coben. He is the internationally number one best-selling novelist. Let's throw out some numbers here. 70 million books in print. What would that look like? How much space would that actually fill? I'm not good at math.
Let's try it.
Okay, he's been translated into 43 languages. I can't even name 43 languages off the top of my head. He's won numerous literary awards, including the Edgar. That's a big deal. The Seamus, the Anthony. His works have been adapted around the world, including put in this one, the 2006 French film, Tell No One. It's one of my favorite films of the past 20 years.
Thank you.
I love that movie. You can stream it, right? You can watch it now on Netflix.
Netflix, I think, doesn't have it right now. I think Amazon maybe some others.
It's phenomenal.
Thank you.
It's so gripping. And I just want to say that last scene, whoo, just gets you. I get chills just thinking about it. He is the creator of television dramas like The Five and Safe, which is also amazing.
Thank you.
Currently filming the Netflix adaptation of The Stranger and his brand new novel, about a father searching for his daughter caught up in a world of intrigue and murder. It's called Run Away. Run Away.
Either way, as long as you're saying it or spelling it, Run Away. It's two separate words, but I'm not sure how. Run Away. No, it would be Run Away.
Is it a noun or a sentence?
Yes. Let's go with that. Don't make the author think too much.
Okay, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So I heard that, people wonder where novelists get their inspiration, especially you. You've written 31 novels now.
Yeah.
One would think one would be like fresh out of ideas, but you actually were inspired by this from a real moment in your life. Can you talk about the opening of the book is a moment that actually kind of happened to you.
Yeah, it opens exactly. You know, it was one of these, I had a bunch of great ideas and I couldn't think of a way into the story. So one day I'm sitting in Central Park in Strawberry Fields, you know, the John Lennon mosaic is there, and there's always a street musician mangling Beatles tunes.
Murdering it, just absolutely.
Absolutely horrible. So I'm sitting there and I'm looking across at the guy and I said, what if that was my lead character's daughter? What if she was strung out and he hadn't seen her in 6 months and he finally found her? And if I open the book that way, and when he tries to rescue her, everything goes wrong. And that's the opening paragraph of Runaway.
And of course, one of the things I also really enjoy about this book, aside from the fact that, does anyone give you enough credit for how funny you are?
Thank you.
It's really funny.
Thank you.
And one of the first things that then happens is, of course, what happens when you have a confrontation in public is you go viral.
Everybody videos it, right.
And so that's where it takes
off. And it wasn't planned, but my lead character is a Wall Street guy, and so he's wearing a suit. And the guy he fights with looks homeless. So when they tape it, even though it's not his fault, they put it online virally, and it's like Wall Street exec beats up homeless guy, you know, rich guy beats up poor guy. And exactly how I think it would really, those things go viral, and we don't really know all the facts.
Exactly. And one of my favorite lines in the whole book is, don't read the comments.
Yeah.
One of the best pieces of advice.
It's been great advice for many years now.
Do you do that? Do you read the comments?
I do not anymore. I don't read reviews. I don't read the comments. I'm actually really happy that I get enough Amazon reviews or whatever, so I don't look at them anymore. I get the desire. But I always, you know, one of the things when I started out, like, Amazon wasn't really around, so I didn't know how bad I was doing or that my rankings or any of that. Now there's too many things to follow online. It's a bad thing. You should just write your book.
And speaking of which, you are such a hugely successful, prolific author. You are coming up on almost 30 years of being a published author. Your first one was published in 1990.
Yep.
And yet you did not have a bestseller right out of the gate.
No.
You were not an overnight success.
No. My first Myron Bolitar book, I made $5,000 advance. And I want to bribe, by the fourth Myron Bolitar book, I was making $6,000.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
So that's how you rocket to the top.
$5,000 to $6,000. But it was my 10th book, Tell No One, that changed my life overnight. But it was my 10th book. And not to sound like an old man, like people don't get it. The kids today don't get it. But that was really good for me in hindsight. You know, I have such an appreciation for what I have now and what it took to get there. And you also can really work on your craft. There's a couple of early books I tell people in the very first page of the book, before I would republish them, I put a paragraph saying, don't read this, it's really not great. So it's okay, just relax and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, I really love that, and I think that is really important, because people look at someone like you who is just guns a-blazing in terms of literary success, has truly the enviable career. And it's important, I think, to kind of take that step back and go, you worked for this. This was a job, and it did not come overnight. And, you know, people say you know, you got your first book deal when you were, what, 26? But it's not like you were then, you know, an enfant
terrible. No, I was hardly an overnight sensation. But it's been, you know, I wouldn't change. People say, would you go back and change something? Wouldn't change anything. Those lean years really make these years that much sweeter.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the characters in this book a little bit. Okay, let's start with the fact that there's a runaway in this book. It feels like, not that you have to speak for every other book and movie out there, but it feels like this is kind of a moment where the lost woman is kind of a thing. She is a presence in literature now, whether it's in a book like Where'd You Go, Bernadette, or in Gone Girl. There is this figure of the enigmatic, elusive female who's disappeared.
Right.
Do you feel that is saying something about where we are right now, or was it just you just wanted to do
it? I've been doing it since 1995. I had a woman disappear in my first books, I'm big on disappearances. I love disappearances because when someone disappears, there's hope. I don't write murder mysteries, despite whatever the reputation is. When someone disappears, there's hope. You can really have full redemption. You could find them. You could be made whole. If somebody is dead or murdered, that's it. You know, you can solve the crime, you can get justice, but you can never have that kind. So I love having somebody, I think something very interesting about, because hope is a wonderful thing to write about. Hope can, you know, fill your heart with love, or it can crush your heart like it's an eggshell. And so I think, in my case anyway, that's why I love to do it. If somebody's dead, okay. But if somebody maybe can be found, maybe can be rescued, can we really have full redemption? You know, that's an intriguing thing for me.
Absolutely. And it's obviously very intriguing to us as readers. And I will say about this book, you will be, I not to be cliche, but you will be guessing until the last page.
Yeah, I knew from the very beginning. That's one of the things I start with. I start with the beginning and the end. So up to that last paragraph, I wasn't exactly sure how I would pull that last trigger. But I knew it right when I started the whole book that I was going to go there.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Big
surprise. I don't want to ruin it for you. We're not going to tell you. But you're not going to figure it out.
You're not going to figure it out.
I hope so.
But you know what's good is when you're not going to figure it out, but then when it is revealed, it is satisfying.
Right.
You know, because sometimes you read something and it's like the author didn't set it up along the way, and then there's a final reveal and it just feels like, okay, well, I couldn't have seen that.
Right.
But this, it's like you get to that end point, and it's like, oh, yeah, you were leading me here all along.
Yeah, all the clues are there. You know, it's interesting, when I did the TV for Netflix, The Five and Safe, I could do something I can't do in books. So after we give away the ending, the twist, I then went back in those last episodes, and I would show you what you had seen before from a slightly different perspective. So in Safe and The Five, in the last episode, we kind of show you, and you kind of go, oh, right, it was right there. I love that feeling. It's one thing to be fooled, but to then go back and say, wow, it was right there in front of me the whole time.
It's so enjoyable.
Thank you.
It just feels like it's very enjoyable when you feel like, oh, I have been in confident hands this whole time. I've been taken on a journey where I didn't know where I was going. I mean, it's like a magic trick.
Really, in a little bit. I mean, especially the ending of Runaway, and I really want it to be a little bit more haunting and lingering. I want you to ask yourself a few questions. Want to call your best friend and talk about it? I don't say it's dark or light, but it's gray, and I really kind of enjoyed that in this one, where it's not just a gasp, but hopefully it's a gasp that will make you think.
And one of the elements in this book is also DNA testing.
Yep.
And you actually did it?
Yeah, I did one of those
genealogy. Just in kind of preparation for...
The whole world is doing it. You haven't done a genealogy?
Oh, I've done it.
Yes.
Well, I've done it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did one of those genealogy tests because I wanted to do research on this. I took the test. That's how I do research. I'm a very lazy researcher. So when I got the test back, I saw, wow, you have a first cousin. I was so excited. And I looked and it was my first cousin. So it really wasn't very exciting. I had nothing in my past. I was very, very boring.
I found a little bombshell in mine.
So did you?
So we're still figuring it out. I found someone who is probably a half sibling. So that's,
Wow, that's big. See, that's the thing.
That's
hearing
cool,
these
right?
stories all. For a novelist, the modern world, all this stuff is so cool. You know, Runaway's a contemporary novel. It's taking place now. So there's viral videos. There's genealogy, DNA. There's some of the new cult stuff that we've been dealing with. Adoption scams. College, even, which is becoming...
drugs.
Bigger. All the stuff, you know, I don't write about the past, so I hope people will find things in it that relates to their lives.
And you, speaking of relatability, you very much have always based a lot of your characters and situations, and maybe even canines in the book, on characters in your real life.
Right.
And yet, when you do these adaptations, or these adaptations are done, especially internationally, I read a really great interview with you where you talk about when your works are translated into a different medium and how you are not precious about keeping faithful to the book, and you really like changing them.
I do.
So let's talk, why is that? What happens in that translation from the page to a screen that then opens it up to different characterizations, different countries, different situations?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think, first of all, if I ask you to name your favorite adaptations, my guess is they're not one that kept slavishly devoted to the text. I think of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I think of L.A. Confidential, a bunch, even Godfather. They really did not keep, there's two different mediums. One's visual and one is I can be inside the head. So they're really two very different mediums. You have to understand that. The second thing is, I don't want to repeat myself. So why would I want to tell you the same exact story? Just read the book. So one example, for example, and people will say you're doing this to be politically correct, and I'm not, but The Stranger, which we're now filming in England, when I wrote it several years ago, the stranger was a white male computer nerd. And I was like, that's a little hackneyed now. So instead, it is a female person of color, young, and she's great, Hannah John Kamen. She's going to absolutely destroy the role. And it just adds a new dimension. It's visually more arresting. It makes the story more interesting. So if I translate it sometimes, also you're working with other people. So in the case of Tell No One, moving this story from New Jersey to France, I think added a whole other dimension. It gave the characters a new and different heart. Not to say I won't do ones that are right here and right where I am, but it's been really kind of fun to work with people who really see the book very differently than I do.
And this is a really expanding part of your career now. It's been almost a year since the announcement of this deal with Netflix. 14?
Yeah, 14.
14
We have 14 novels, including Runaway.
Yes, I wanted to ask about that because this was one of the ones announced, and so it's coming. So how is this going to, you must be thinking now of how Runaway, is it going to be a film or a series?
Probably an 8-part series. That seems to be what I like doing and what they like doing for me. So I'm not sure. You know, we're doing one on Netflix Spain, probably one Netflix France, one Netflix Poland, and that's great. The wonderful thing about Netflix is, I think for people, is they can now see, you know, the international world has wonderful television, you know, some great stuff. So the show will be actually, some will be in French or Spanish or Polish or whatever language. And they'll be dubbed or better, much, much better if you watch subtitles over here. So it's been really kind of exciting. The one I'm working on mostly right now is The Stranger, which is filming right now in Manchester, England. And, oh man, I'm so excited for it. Every morning I watch the rushes. That's the good thing with technology. So I can see what goes on every morning. I can see what they filmed the day before.
And it's... you've talked about the difference between doing, you know, you of course, as an athlete, make the sports analogy of when you're writing alone. It's like playing a game of golf or whatever. Or when you're doing this kind of work, it's a collaborative. It's a team sport.
Yeah.
And you're really just doing exercising completely different muscles.
I'm also, I think, a socially adept introvert. So here we're talking, we're fine, we're okay, and I can do that for a while, but then I gotta go in a room and be alone. I mean, I spent this is my 31st book, and it's a long time sitting in rooms alone. So to get out and meet people and hang with the cast and crew like I was just over in England doing, that's so energetic, that's so much fun. And then all of a sudden, after about 2 or 3 days, I'm like, I gotta get back into my room alone. So the writing is actually feeding each other. I'm not slowing down my pace in terms of writing novels by doing the TV. If anything, it's sort of energizing me. It's making me have the appreciation to go back into that room and be alone.
And, you know, people think that the life of a best-selling author is pretty glamorous.
Oh, yeah.
And, right.
Loads of glamour.
Right. I want to talk to you about the glamour of it, because you don't just go into that room alone. You write in like a Starbucks or a deli or an Uber, all the really most glamorous elite hotspots, right? It's not just sitting in your perfect desk in your perfect room, and then you go into caveman mode when it's getting close to deadline. I've read that you just go full.
It's not pretty. You don't want to be around me. My kids are like, throw daddy a banana and run.
Just throw some meat into the corner of the room, right?
Pretty.
Like the lion's cage.
But it's interesting, you know, you raised this, and the piece of writing advice I would give to those who are trying to write out there, several things. One is, if you ask 10 writers how they do it, you'll get 11 different answers. But it breaks down to this. Does it make me write? Do it. Does it not make me write? Don't do it. So in my case, being in the same room all the time does not make me write. I use up a place. So I'll go to a coffee shop and I'll work pretty well there. And then after a few weeks, I won't work so well there. So I'll move over there. Anything that works, I do it. It's like riding a horse until that horse collapses and then I find another horse. So anything that makes you write, don't worry how good or bad it is yet. Turn that voice off. Anything that makes you write and produce pages, do, and then you rewrite it. That's really one of the main keys that people don't get. We all get paralyzed. I still get paralyzed every day when I write. You have to fight through that paralysis.
I love that you are so transparent about that. That it's not like you're, the Wizard of Oz behind the, behind the curtain. You're very transparent in the fact that it is hard and it is work.
Yeah.
And you say, this is work. This is a job. I don't have fans. I have readers. You're really like, you approach it in a very serious, thoughtful way that is about doing a job.
Yes.
As opposed to creating magic.
Yeah, but that's such not. You never really hear anybody's producing or doing a lot of work say that. I mean, I remember reading in a Philip Roth novel. You can't get more literary than a Philip Roth novel. And he had a quote, and I don't remember where he got the quote from. It wasn't his, but amateurs wait for inspiration to arrive. The rest of us just get to work. And that was his attitude as well. And that's just has to be. So it may be an art, it may be whatever, but you have to treat it like a job. Like the plumber can't say, oh, today I'm too important to do pipes. I can't do pipes today. Some days you are going to get stuck anyway, but you have to beat yourself up. A lot of writing is a lot of self-hatred. It's a lot of self-flagellation. There's a lot of days I don't like myself so much. I don't feel good about myself unless I'm producing something. So most writers don't. I let myself feel that. I get mad at myself. I go through all those things. And again, I've written 31 novels, so you'd think I'd be past that. No, every book is the same. I'm insecure. I'll be with this book, right? And I'll be sitting there and I'll be writing it going, oh my God, this book stinks. I was so good before. And 5 minutes later, this book is genius. No one will ever read it because they'll read that crappy book that's already out and never give this work of Shakespearean proportions a chance. And that goes on every day in my head. So if you don't have that, if you think, most successful or best-selling writers don't have that, you're pretty wrong. You have to have that.
And it reminds me of what Springsteen says, right, about how when he goes out on stage, he has to feel like he is the greatest performer in the world, and he also has to be absolutely petrified.
Yes, it's exactly that.
It's a little bit of both, right?
Right, because you have an insecurity thinking you stink. At the same time, I'm going to say, please sit with me while I talk to you for 400 pages straight. I have that much genius to give you. So there's a hubris and an insecurity that certainly is a contradiction, but I don't, a paradox, but that's how it is.
That's the job.
Yeah,
and speaking of Springsteen, as someone else from the 201.
Yeah, there we go.
You're from New York.
Yes.
New Jersey.
I'm from New Jersey.
Newark, New Jersey.
Oh, Newark. I said New York. I'm sorry. Newark,
no,
yes.
Please.
Born and raised.
Please.
Yeah.
Like I said, Hudson County.
There we go.
Hudson County. And you have said that your upbringing and being born in Newark has been part of your inspiration, some of the things that you saw growing up. And I also love that, you know who else is from that area? George R.R. Martin.
Yeah.
And I always feel like if you want to know what it's like being from the 201, read Harlan Coben and George R.R. Martin, and you will understand why we all are the way we are.
Yeah.
Right? So what is it? What is it about our special little place in the
that's
world?
A really that's a good question.
That, like some of the weirdness that you've seen in your life that comes through in these little twists and turns.
That's really, I think we're little and dense. I think we're angry. We're a state, but we're looked down upon by New York, which is, we have our main cities, New York and Philadelphia. We're looked down upon kind of by both of them, and yet we're better than both of them.
Absolutely.
We also stick our turnpike in the absolute worst area. It's like driving through the beginning scene of the Terminator movie. But we do that so you can't see the great beauty
of the Garden State.
Of the Garden State. Yeah, we're called the Garden State. You drive through it. It's just everything about us is kind of a chip on your shoulder, a little bit of anger, a little bit of attitude. And I always find, and I've spoken to George R.R. Martin about this. Interestingly enough, we see each other all the time in Santa Fe. Two Jersey boys, we always see each other in Santa Fe. But that the more specific you are to that New Jersey experience, the more universal the appeal. You mentioned 43 languages, and I'm always wondering, how do they get these stories of people from New Jersey? But if I make it every town USA, it's not going to work.
Right, and that's sometimes you have to fight against as an artist, because there is this, you know, the bigger you get and the more you deal in the corporate world, there is this like, oh, but you have to make it more bland.
Right.
And your books are not bland.
You have to be very careful about trying to please everybody. There's going to be people who don't like it, and that's good. If you have I don't know any, and first of all, I don't know any well-read authors. When people get angry about a bad review, I said, you know who never gets a bad review? Authors who aren't read. They never get bad reviews. So that's just, you know, that's part of it.
All right, one last question before we go. How is Laszlo taking all of this newfound success?
Laszlo's my dog, for those who don't know.
Havanese.
That's right, Havanese. You can find pictures of her all over
just
my Twitter
cutest,
page.
Yeah. Just the absolute cutest.
She's not happy with me right now because she knows I'm on book tour. But she knows I'm also making money for new treats. So it's a little bit of both.
All right, good. Because now the stardom must be. I was concerned that maybe it was getting to her.
Not to her. Yeah, she's okay.
All right, good. She's keeping it humble and
real. Yes. Like, by the way, I know Laszlo's a girl. My son, who when he was ill in the hospital, we got this dog, and he's like, I love the name Laszlo, but it's a girl, so we named Laszlo.
Which happens in the book, which is not a spoiler.
No, it won't be.
Okay, well, I'm glad she's staying true to her Jersey roots, like we all do.
Harlan
Coben, the book is called Run Away, or Runaway, if you feel like calling it that. It is out now. It will keep you guessing until the end, and then it will haunt you,
thank you.
That's what
thank
we want,
you.
And that's exactly what you do. Harlan, thank you so much
thank
for
you
joining
so much.
It's been a pleasure.
A lot of fun.